14. Pearson was sitting at his desk when the first reports came in. He listened idly. They seemed to come from a long way off, remote and theoretical, without immediate importance. He gave his acknowledgement and turned away from the relay. After a while, it occurred to him that he had failed. Pratt was dead, and Jones lay groaning in a police hospital. Jones was still alive. Well, that was it. Getting to his feet, he walked over to the window. Hands in his pockets, he stood gazing out at the dark, nocturnal city. Very little stirred. In the next day or so, police units would round up Jones's followers in this area. There was no hurry. It could wait. In fact, it could wait forever. But he had to go through with it. All the way to the bitter end. He had started it. He had to finish it. He did not intend to back out now simply because there was no hope. He thought briefly of trying to murder Jones in the hospital as he lay helpless. No, he had already made his quixotic gesture. He had already proven what he set out to prove, what he had to know. Jones could not be killed. It was futile. FedGov was through. He might as well throw in the sponge. As a matter of fact, he waited 2 weeks. He waited until the actual figures on the plebiscite began to trickle in. He even procrastinated until the building reeked with the acrid fumes of burning paper, the official documents of security going up in smoke. When the Supreme Council resigned, Pearson was still standing mutely in his Detroit office, head sunk down on his chest, hands in his pockets. A few hours before the pale, weak figure of Jones rose from the hospital bed, entered an official car, and headed toward Detroit, Pearson put in a call to Cusick.
I'll come over there, Pearson told him. I'll talk to you at your apartment. We're blowing up this building. We don't want to leave anything.
The first thing he noticed as he entered Cusick's apartment was the general untidiness. He didn't remember it that way. For a moment he stood in the doorway, baffled and disturbed.
Well, that's right, he said finally. Your wife's gone. You're here all alone.
Cusick closed the hall door.
Can I pour you a drink?
You bet your life, Pearson said gratefully. A water high.
I've got a fifth of good scotch, Cusick said.
He fixed the drinks and the two of them sat down.
We're through, Pearson said.
I know.
It was a mistake. Of course he couldn't be killed, but I had to try. You know, the son of a bitch might have been bluffing. It was an outside chance. I wanted to test him. Pragmatic, you know.
What comes next? Cusick asked. Is there anything we haven't done?
Pearson's hard, relentless face twisted.
As a matter of fact, he said slowly, we have, technically, 2 more hours of authority. It'll take that long to make Jones the legal government. As of right now, I still have charge of Rafferty's project.
Do you know what the project is? I thought you didn't know.
Glaring up at the ceiling, Pearson said,
there are 2 ships ready. I mean real ships, ships capable of space travel. You know what I mean? Interplan, they call them. Stored down in ordnance somewhere, ready to go. They're kept on 24-hour alert, always ready, always serviced and fueled.
He added,
they're supposed to be the best. It's my understanding that they work by automatic beam. Somebody, I forget who, told me once that a pilot station on Venus controls them as soon as they leave Earth. Maybe it isn't Venus, maybe it's Mars.
Venus, Cusick affirmed. Pearson nodded as he sipped his drink.
You realize, of course, that this is an elaborate little game. Naturally, I know what this project is. I found out the first day, but for the record, I'm talking only about the 2 ships. They, you understand who I mean, will be divided into 2 groups, 4 in 1, 4 in the other. So if 1 ship fails to arrive, there'll be the other.
On Venus, Cusick asked. Are there supplies? Some kind of installations?
Mountains of supplies. Miles of installations. All we have to do is get the 8 of them there.
Cusick got to his feet.
I'll notify Rafferty.
Pearson also rose.
My car's outside. I'll drive you to the field. Better yet, I'll come along.
Within half an hour, they were setting down in San Francisco. Rafferty was asleep. Cusick roused him and delivered the message. Ordnance was notified. The transport van was activated and the 8 Venusians collected into it. 7 adults and 1 baby still in its incubator. Frightened, bewildered, the mutants sat huddled together, timid persons peering up, blinking rapidly, conversing in low, uncertain whispers.
Good luck, Rafferty told them.
Pearson and Cusick rode along with the van to Ordnance. They supervised the loading of the ships, 4 mutants in each. The complex safety seals were melted in place and the ships uprighted. As Cusick and Pearson and Rafferty watched from the shadows at the edge of the field, the ships were simultaneously launched. In all, the whole thing took an hour and a half. Jones still had 30 minutes to wait.
Feel like a drink? Cusick asked Pearson and Rafferty.
The 3 of them got thoroughly drunk. In their grim stupor, time and space ceased to have meaning. The world blurred in a chaotic swirl of drifting phantoms, indistinct sounds, shifting colors and shafts of light. Sometime during the process, an event momentarily caught Cusick's attention. 4 gray-uniformed men stood around them, examining their identification papers with brisk efficiency. Muddled with a violent effort of will, he focused on them.
What do you want? He demanded.
But they weren't interested in him. It was Pearson they were grabbing hold of and carting off. Suddenly horrified, Cusick struggled furiously. In a frenzy, he waded in and fought to save Pearson. One of the gray-uniformed figures shoved him down, and another stepped on his face. Then they were gone. Cusick lay on the floor beside the inert shape of Rafferty among overturned stools and broken glass. Gradually, reluctantly, the frigid gray of sanity crept back into his mind. Pearson had been arrested. Outside the bar boomed a growing cacophony of sounds. The roar of motors, shrieks, shouts, marching feet, exploding shells. The remaining half hour had passed. Jones was in office. The day of the crisis government, the new world order, had begun.